First, if you've never had your digital identity verified before, you're going to have to go through the process if you want your vaccine passport. One of the ways to be verified will be through the government's Real Me service. Some private digital ID providers say under new legislation before Parliament, Internal Affairs is at risk of becoming both provider and regulator of such services. There's also great debate around the user experience, the ease with which Real Me can be used compared to some other options. We'll hear some of those debates this morning. Around 9:30, Christchurch and Banks Peninsula residents can go online from Friday to find out how vulnerable their properties are to coastal erosion as part of Christchurch City Council's efforts to engage residents in moves to adapt to coastal and low-lying areas of the city and peninsula in line with predicted sea level rises. This follows a hazards report from Tonkin and Taylor. We'll hear what the website offers and how you can use it. Our Māturitenga today is Karen Middleton in Australia, where Sydneysiders are enjoying their new freedoms. A climate change stalemate could be broken. The Labour Party has a new corruption scandal. And a Bonza, a new airline, is set to take to Aussie skies. Our guest after 10, Alexandra Morton, a field biologist who's been on a 30-year crusade to save British Columbia's wild salmon. She's taken on governments and industry in her extensive research to shine a light on the detrimental impact of ocean-based salmon farming off Canada's west coast. Her book, Not On My Watch, has been described as a roadmap of resistance. Our book reviewer is Lisa Finucane, reviewing The Raffles Affair by Vicky Virtue, about 25 to 11. About a quarter to 11 today, the final of All That Ends Starts Again by Rochelle Elliott, our reading. Pōra te taha ia, Charlotte Ryan. Music with Charlotte Ryan after 11. She's got a little Beatles up her sleeve ahead of the release of Peter Jackson's new documentary and a track off Cat Power's new covers album. About 11:25, it's the perfect time to get planting, but what happens if you're not able to get to the garden centre? As is the case in Auckland, landscape gardener Xanthi White with some tips on gardening for free. What is happening in the world of the arts with Mark Amory, who's been out in some of our smaller centres and looking at how some enterprising people have helped keep rural New Zealand's arts and heritage alive. 9:09 it is. You are listening to 9 to Noon on RNZ National. Well, the need to prove you are who you say you are has increased in the digital era, and anyone wanting a vaccine passport is going to have to go through the process. From the end of November, New Zealanders will be able to download digital vaccination and COVID-19 test certificates for use in New Zealand and overseas. In order to access their own vaccination records, people will have to go via the government's Real Me service or sign up for a new My Health account. Interest in the new website for COVID vaccination certificates caused outages on the Real Me site last week. Real Me is run by Internal Affairs, and it's one of a number of providers offering digital identity verification. But there are concerns the department will also play the role of regulator too, with new legislation introduced to Parliament. The Digital Identity Services Trust Framework Bill will set up the legal structure for providing secure and trusted digital identity services for people and organisations. In a moment, we'll hear from Digital Identity New Zealand's incoming Executive Director, Colin Wallace, about the framework and the thorny issues of security and trust when it comes to proving ourselves with our own private information. But first, James Brown is Director of Global Partnerships with Apply ID, a private provider of digital identity services. Kia ora, James. Welcome to 9 to Noon.
Kia ora, Catherine. How are you?
I'm well. Your mission at the start, for people who really have no involvement with this so far, is to explain what services are already using the likes of Real Me or alternative services, passports, IRD, study link and student loans. Please explain how this works.
Yes, of course. So, everybody would generally be verifying themselves for a number of services. And you've already mentioned a couple in passports, but you also then think about bank accounts. If you think about any policy that you need to determine who you are via your address, your date of birth, or other mechanisms. And that's Real Me. That's what it was set up to do many, many years ago. And I think you may have mentioned earlier that the sort of the level of uptake, unfortunately, hasn't been where the government would like it to be. Where we come in is that we take that process, and you know, you've been through it, I've been through it, I'm sure a lot of your listeners have been through it. You've got to collate all of that documentation, you've got to remember where you put your passport, you've got to remember, you know, if your driver's license is up to date, you've got to print off your utility bill, you've got to make sure it's in your name and it's in your right address. We use technology to simplify that process. And all we do is we use your phone, your smartphone, we take a picture, we verify your identity with a short video, which you are prompted to certain gestures in order to prevent fraud, because just doing a selfie, we feel, is not enough. And then using that technology and interacting with data behind the scenes, we verify your identity, onboard you, and away you go. It's very simple, it's very quick, and it's very easy to use.
In what circumstances is this being used now? You gave the example of taking the utility bill off. I use that when I need a new parking kind of sticker, right?
Yes.
And I've got to take my utility bill. For passports, it's a higher level. It's the driver's license. It's been a while since I've done my passport either, right? So you can keep doing these things manually, but what is the level of acceptance of these new digital identity services by various organisations? Like, how do you prove the efficacy of your service, or do you end up being mandated by individual private or public organisations?
Well, the data we use is the most up-to-date data that we've got access to. And it goes back to, I suppose, a little supply and demand. As we've moved into more of a digital world, and COVID, let's be honest, has sort of accelerated that thinking and that adoption, we've actually determined that people actually want things, you know, almost at two clicks. So if you can't do it in two clicks, I don't really want to be involved. So what we are actually using is the technology and the data, combining that. And the number of organizations we are working with right now, it's across the spectrum. So we are not pigeonholed into any particular sector. We work with numerous companies across multiple industries. And what they're trying to determine is how can they make it easier for themselves, the client, but also actually most importantly, for the customer, and that customer seamless onboarding process.
So banks might be a logical example, but what I'm getting at is when it comes to government organisations, say education or claiming other kinds of government benefits, are the private providers accepted as authentic verifiers in those instances, or does the government tend to use RealMe?
I think there's the transitionary period at the moment where RealMe technically is still the default, but what we're seeing actually is more interaction between government and then providers like ourselves, because the reality is that government has a lot of plates that they're spinning, as you can imagine. The reality is we can actually adopt, create, and then deploy technology of this nature far quicker. And that's what we're trying to, that's what our message really is. If you look at some of the feedback and some of the research coming out of the Norwegian agency in terms of what governments try to do for themselves, it's very difficult to build these things. And if you look at the uptake of RealMe, unfortunately, it's not quite where maybe government would actually like. So it's more about them being the custodians of the data. And if you think about what you've said, across all the different parts of government, so if it's health, if it's passports, benefits, etc., we then can actually attach and integrate our technology to make it actually much more easy to access that data and then redistribute it depending on how much the individual wants to share for that solution or product they're actually trying to get.
Okay, bear with me, James. Again, RealMe currently is covering COVID-19 financial assistance, banking and finance, Business Connect and Companies Register, and education, its enrolments and students' allowances, birth deaths, civil unions, marriages, voting, income tax, GST returns, under health, it's ACC claims. So we can see where it is being used in a government context. As you said, you've got private providers, it might be banks, I don't know, it might be employers, it might be credit checks, it might be anything. People want
anybody
to know,
that needs
people
to
want
verify,
to know you
yes.
are who you. Now, you just raised an important point. The state, by legislated authority and mandate, can require me to provide it with certain information. And do people get queasy at the idea of private sector companies having access or holding such personal information that may be required of me statutorily? You just explained the concept that the government is the custodian of the data and that companies like yours bring your technology to the distribution. Can you explain how those two things work together without breaching privacy or without making people queasy about private sector access to such sensitive data?
Yeah, look, I think it's a very important point. And if I use Facebook just as an example, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners do use Facebook and other mechanisms like that, when you want to do something and you have to click the button for terms and conditions, how many of us actually sit there and read the terms and conditions? And I would actually say that that's a very minimal amount of people that actually do that. To your point, we don't store data. So we utilize the data in order to verify the individual, meet the requirements of compliance around AML and KYC, and also actually quite a big one in today's society because we now live in this digital age, the prevention of fraud. So you mentioned earlier a moment ago about downloading a certificate for the sort of the vaccine verification. Now, if I think about that, whether it's a paper format, even if it's laminated, it still opens up to the potential for fraud. Whereas if you have a digital platform and vehicle, it limits it greatly. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to broker the relationship between both. And that's the point I think you mentioned in the build-up.
How does that marry up, though, James? Sorry to interrupt. With the identity theft that is rife all over the internet, has that come because of an individual's carelessness at some point, or has it come because digital storage is in fact no way perfect?
Well, if you look at the latest piece of research about 12 months or so ago, 6% of New Zealand businesses were adequately protected from cyber attacks. And you yourself have, I'm sure, spoken about some of the instances that we've seen here in New Zealand in the last little while, the Waikato, DHB, RBNZ and others. The simple fact is that verification and then protection is part of the journey. And I think, yes, unfortunately, there are instances when people leave laptops and cars and things of that nature, which is unavoidable. But the reality is that we've got to start with the point of reference, which is being able to share information, which I control, to actually enable me to get the services or the solutions or the products that I want. How many times have you gone to apply for something and you've been asked 10 or 15 questions when only two or three questions should suffice?
Okay.
And that's the thing that we're trying to streamline.
Can we make an important point right now? When it comes to vaccines, because this is such a sensitive moment in time.
It is.
RealMe and MyHealthAccount, both government suppliers, will be the only providers of the vaccine verification. Am I correct?
At the moment, that is the discussion. However, we would certainly encourage the opportunity for providers like Apply ID and others to actually be okay. A part of that much wider ecosystem.
You mentioned AMLs and KYCs before. What are they, please?
So the Anti-Money Laundering.
Thank you.
So the Anti-Money Laundering Act and KYC, Know Your Customer. So you mentioned banks. We all have to verify who we are when we want to open up a bank account as well as other products.
James, your particular concern about the internal affairs, which was the sort of instigator and provider of RealMe, becoming a regulator also under this proposed legislation, this framework bill that I've got in front of me, Digital Identity Services. Internal affairs tell us that were this legislation to proceed, those two functions would be clearly separated.
That's a really interesting point, and it really does open up for debate. And I can reference multiple examples where governments around the world have tried this and it has not failed. And what I wouldn't want to see is New Zealand follow down the same path. You can look at the statistics around the likes of the UK spending hundreds of millions of dollars and it not working. You can look at other countries, even Australia to some extent actually have spent a lot of money doing this. So what we believe is the best way, because it's about having a transparent, but also actually a competitive landscape. You know, we recognize that we're not the only provider here. We have to back our product. Obviously, we believe our product is fantastic. However, if you are able to actually have the government as the sort of, the data holder, but ultimately open it up to having multiple providers, it gives everyday Kiwis choice. And if we've got choice, we've got transparency. And if we've got transparency, we've got competitive landscape. And we welcome that. We actually think that that's the right way to do. If they remain, as the regulator and the provider, I would be a little bit mindful of just that sort of, you know, that competitive landscape internally.
Could you then talk about what you believe the differences in user experience between RealMe and what you and others offer? Give us some details on why you believe, for a start, that you can offer a superior user experience, i.e. easier and quicker.
Well, I'll give you one really easy example. So before COVID, we used to talk about things like financial inclusion and financial exclusion. We then just changed that first word to digital exclusion. When we moved into COVID, we were a little bit nervous, actually, of that divide getting greater. Would people understand technology? Would they adopt technology? Would they use technology? So the best example I'll give you is that we've actually had a 92-year-old person actually go through our system with very little guidance whatsoever. Now, that says to me that the simplification of our process is such that it can actually be rolled out and deployed across all parts of our ecosystem. And we have to bear in mind that people are at different cycles or different parts of their cycle with digital adoption. And that tells me that instead of sitting there for 10 or 15 minutes inputting all your data and your passport and all sorts of things, which is done manually, open to manipulation, open to errors, where errors is done digitally. And bearing in mind that 97% of New Zealanders have smartphones. We are one of the most connected countries in the world. And even if you don't have one, you have access. That's the data that we are seeing. So I think that, you know, that is a really good standalone example of how adopting this process will actually be far better than using something that is a little bit more analog.
Can you explain to me what your own company's dealings and similar companies' dealings is with DIA now when it comes to access to their data? How much are private companies able to access? And I think you pay for it, but how does it work now?
We do. You're right. There is obviously a cost. It's quite limited at this moment in time. But we are having conversations about how we can integrate with them. I think there was a conversation earlier in the week around tourism and events. So if you think about the process, I don't know the last event that you went to, but you would have gone online, you would have booked your tickets, you would have either downloaded them onto your phone or you would have printed them off. You would have had a QR code on there, you would have turned up at the gate, person would have scanned, and away you go. What we are trying to say is that if we can get a little bit more access to your data and actually combine that actually with then the vaccine data, that actually there, if that's on your phone or if it's printed, what you could have is that you'd have the QR code, you could have a biometric picture verification who you actually are, and then you can have a digital imprint that you've actually had one or two vaccines. And that would depend on the event provider, whether they will accept people in with one vaccine or two. So that's the type of thing that we would love to work on, because we believe that is a really good fix. Again, protects people, prevention of fraud, and actually allows the event provider to be safe in the knowledge that people coming into their establishment have been vaccinated. Then when the borders actually roll open, you've already got something in place that you have actually tested and provided that it actually does work. And that becomes quite exciting.
Thank you, James. Stay with us. Colin Wallace, as we said, is incoming Executive Director of Digital Identity New Zealand. Colin, kia ora, welcome to 9 to Noon.
Raina, Catherine.
What is Digital Identity New Zealand, please?
It's an industry association, Catherine. It represents the wider industry. It's part of the Tech Alliance, NZ Tech Alliance, and that has around 23, I think, affiliate organisations: agri-tech, biotech, AI, forum, blockchain, so on. Digital identity is one of those, representing providers like ApplyID and others.
I don't want to reinvent everything we've just discussed with James, so I'll give you an opportunity in a moment to pick up anything you agree or disagree with. But I am curious, because I think right back in the beginning of Real Me, you were involved in it setting up.
I mean, I was doing the standards, right? I was the standards guy. There were four of us actually doing the standards back in the 2005 to 2008 era. So, yeah, okay. Fair play.
Well, I'm curious as to how you think it has gone. But for a start, that fundamental question of such sensitive information required and held by the state, and that sensitivity people have about its transfer in any form to private providers. You know, having worked at the start on the concept of a government agency providing this service, how do you approach that question?
Well, two things is, remember, there's a sense these days, particularly as RealMe is branded, that it is a thing, a single thing. It's actually a series of components that are put together under a single brand. So I think that's really important as we sort of work through this to sort of kind of understand. But to your point, you know, we have certainly, you know, there's a case, I think, where we try to look for ways of moving forward with some of the modernization that James was talking about there. You know, take for example, the notion of moving that information. You've talked about that. But as James correctly said, it's not necessarily moving, accessing the information. It's a zero knowledge proof, a sort of a yes, no answer. You know, you can put a claim, you know, we have a, you know, someone who's wanting to register with our service, and they claim that they are, you know, that their date of birth is X. We could say yes, or they're claiming that they're over 21 to receive the service. Answer yes or no. Don't have to have the actual data move.
Would competition and allowing these private providers a greater role improve performance, if I can put it that way? How is RealMe performing for ease of use relative to some of the other providers? The actual user performance and ease of use relative to private competition.
Right. Yes. Well, I think that it has fallen behind, to be honest. I think it has had a lack of investment over the years. So I do think that there are, you know, better performing systems, but you've got to remember that RealMe has a role to be the safety net, to be the leaving nobody behind. So I do sense that the government has that role, you know, to offer some kind of service. And perhaps that's the reason why some of the investment hasn't been put into it, because maybe they really don't want to compete with the private sector with, you know, a much better and smoother user experience. But it does, it's probably politically obliged to provide at least some service.
What is your view of the legislation as it stands, and with the Department of Internal Affairs having told us that were that legislation to proceed, there would be a clear separation between regulator and provider? I think this relates also to where the trust sits. Do you have an issue with that, the way we heard from James?
I tend to agree with James on this. The optics of having an organisation, even if it's the same organisation, quite separate, I sincerely believe that they would do their absolute best to keep that separate. In fact, you know, much more so than in many cases. So I've got, in that sense, I've got my qualms. But you've got the case of the, you know, the regulator, the potentially the accreditor of the certification also being government, as well as the responsible agency. We could perhaps guess who that might be. And all of a sudden, you actually start stacking these things up. Okay, it's a small market, but there's, you know, optics, I think, are a concern for, should be a concern for the government as much as private industry.
We talked about the ease of use by the user, but I think it was James who also alluded to the fact that fraud and avoiding fraud is going to be pivotal as more and more of these very sensitive situations arise, for example, proof of vaccine or any other number of matters now. And he was talking about a selfie just not being sufficient. Extra layers to ensure that there is minimal opportunity for fraud. I don't know how controversial biometric data is going to be as part of this as well. It's one thing at an airport, but will we accept it when we're going to a bar? But how would you describe where we are at with the most up-to-date, fraud-proof and privacy-secure technology in the system as it stands now?
Certainly in New Zealand, I think there are some great solutions that are abounding. I think that, you know, in terms of, you know, the selfie and so on, there are some checks that you can do to make sure that the selfie is matching with the photo on record and the passports database and so on. So there are some methods that may not seem that obvious to people, but there are some checks being made. That said, James is absolutely right. The potential for fraud, masquerading, spoofing is pretty hard, pretty large. So there's some real issues to deal with that. I would like to think that nobody is doing identity proofing on the basis of a single photograph without any other checks.
So
liveness checks or background checks.
So where are we at now as we are about to introduce a suite of privileges related to whether or not you're vaccinated, going from whether you can go to Rhythm and Vines to potentially whether you might be able to go into a hospitality sector, let alone travel? I mean, how ready are we for so-called vaccine passports?
Not really ready at all, I don't think, to the extent that, you know, of course, who could have predicted that we're in the position that we're in? And it's too easy to say, well, you know, we should have invested all this years ago, and everyone, you know, we would have had 90% real me verified, you know, we'd agreed that vaccination data could be held in the same, you know, by government and seamlessly with consent being moved between them. You know, it's easy to look back and say there is we could have done it better. No country in the world has done a stunningly stellar job at this. And I think from what I've seen in the few weeks I've been here, I think it's a reasonable stab that has been taken. I think that, as James said, this notion of actually carrying a number of different things to Rhythm and Vines to basically is giving the option to, you know, to basically prove that. But it's going to be quite difficult for those folks on the gate. As they're basically being turned into, you know, identity experts to do the verification here. So we've got to be very mindful of how this is going to be used in the wild. So we've really got to be thoughtful about how to make this practical.
Thank you both of you, Colin Wallace and James Brown, and a statement from Internal Affairs. These statements can be attributed to David Philp, Acting Deputy Chief Executive. The number of identities RealMe has verified since it's established is 912,357. The number of people who've signed up for RealMe since the initial vaccine passport details were announced by the Prime Minister on October the 5th. Since that date, 2,014 verified identities accounts have been set up and 1,031 people have renewed their identities. However, we're unable to say how many are as a direct result of the Ministry's beta site going live last week. Does the department consider with its RealMe service that it is both competitor and regulator of a similar identity verification services on the market? The answer, the government has different roles in the digital identity system. Currently, it's a provider of digital identity services. In the future, it will have a regulatory role under the Digital Identity Trust framework. If DIA is the lead agency for both these roles, there will be steps in place to ensure these functions are kept separate. Work is currently underway to assess the options available for the regulatory oversight of the Digital Identity Trust framework. And finally, will the DIA make biometric data available to private providers, and when might this happen? The answer, we expect RealMe services will be modernised to ensure they meet standards under the upcoming Digital Identity Trust framework. We also expect that the framework will have clear rules if there is access to biometric data held by DIA.